Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. And guys, I'm Gavin Shaw. Alex Wolf has the day off. So I am joined by my best friend from across the pond, the legend, Jack Huntley, a fantastic, I would go so far as to say elite writer for the Strickland. And he came out with, well, has come out with one article recently, is about to come out with another, both of which are really, really good. The first one is all about the Knicks defense. So we do a deep dive on why the Knicks have struggled on that end of the floor this year, including issues in transition, issues with fouling, the adjustments of the new guards, Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, Julius Randle having somewhat, or at least inconsistent moments on that end, Mitchell Robinson still finding his form, and so much more about the defense. And then Jack wrote a big piece about Obi Toppin. So we dive deep on how he's improved this year, where he still needs to get better, and what his future ultimately is on the New York Knicks. So all that and more right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
You are Locked On Knicks, and we wanted to thank you, as always, for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. I'm Gavin Shaw, a play-by-play broadcaster back to work. Alex Wolf has the day off. So today I am joined by Jack Huntley from across the pond. He writes about the Knicks at the Strickland. And Jack, I've said it before, I will say it again now. You're not just one of my favorite Knicks writers. You're just one of my favorite writers, period. Really, really enjoy all your work. And lucky me, we have not one, but two articles to talk about today. You released a fantastic piece breaking down the Knicks issues defensively a couple of days ago. And I was lucky to find out, because I have an insider source at the Strickland, you have a piece coming out on Obi Toppin pretty soon. I got to read it ahead of time. It was fantastic. So long-winded way of saying, Jack, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much. Yeah, good to be here. We'll give Alex a day off, I suppose, once in a while.
Yeah, the guy works really hard. He's doing a lot of editing.
He wears many hats.
He has to interpret your strange English vernacular and translate it for an American audience.
He probably has to change like 20 spellings every time I submit something. So I just cannot remember to do it by instinct.
Maybe I'm not. I mean, I might not be speaking for the full audience, but I find it charming. I like the English. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I didn't know you could spell it like that. That's fun.
We'll go with that.
Cool. All right. Let's get into it. All right. Talking the Knicks defense. Since you wrote the article, which again was just 5 days ago, the Knicks defensive numbers have actually gotten worse. They were 20th in the league in defense, according to Cleaning the Glass, when you wrote it. Less than a week later, they're now 25th, according to Cleaning the Glass, despite playing the B version of the Sixers the other night. And I think you get to this point in your article, but it's hard to pinpoint one specific thing, right? You could say the transition defense, you could say the fouling, you could say miscommunication in terms of switches and in terms of what to do on certain screens. You could say general laziness. You could say Mitchell Robinson not being at 100%. There's a lot of different directions you could go with it. But Jack, if I were to just put it to you like this, how would you sum up the Knicks' defensive issues? What would you say?
I mean, like you say, there's no one single dominant factor. I would say it's sort of a melting pot of various issues, some predictable, some not. I mean, I think the biggest issue is just the raw fact that you're incorporating essentially three new starters into a scheme that's very difficult to execute properly and consistently. And that has been sort of the main issue. And I'm not so worried about it long term for that reason. I think Tibbs has enough of a track record where he is going to get them to nail these rotations. It's sort of, It's interesting because after writing that, I was obviously, it's a big sort of talking point at the moment on Twitter, and it kind of mirrors what happened last year. So if you look at our shot distribution at the moment, our defensive shot distribution, we are allowing a ton of threes. And that's the same thing that happened last year. But last year, opponents shot really badly on those threes. And then after 28 games, the defense sort of ticked up and we cut down the number of attempts. And at the same time, opponents started shooting better. But the defense didn't move. So we were third before and we were third after. So the regression happened in season, but because we were executing the scheme better, it didn't show. And I think the same thing is going to happen this year, where initially, you know, there's a lot of errors, there's miscommunications. But what you'll find is, and the tell will be when the defense is getting better, is that those three-point attempts will come down because the closeouts will be crisper. They'll be running guys off the line and funneling them towards Mitch and Noel in the middle. And that is, in essence, is the scheme. I think it will be all right. It's just a bit dodgy at the moment.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's the perfect conjunction of again, guys adjusting to a new scheme. And I think personnel drop-offs, and maybe this is something everyone noted, but maybe something that they underrated, like going from Kemba Walker to, like, I shiver to say it, but or from Elfrid Payton to Kemba Walker, which again, should in no world, in no context should be a drop-off, but you're losing some size there. Evan Fournier to Reggie Bullock. Again, you're losing a little bit of size. You're losing a little bit of physicality. And I feel like Fournier and Kemba in particular, and this is, again, them just being new, like on top of any physical limitations, the communication side of it has been really poor. And you see just a couple of possessions every game where someone gets a wide open or near open three because Kemba and RJ just don't really talk. Or there was a play in the Cavs game where Kemba got switched onto a big and RJ noticed this was the Bucks game. It was Bobby Portis and RJ kind of noticed and RJ said, all right, I'm going to tag down and make sure you're not caught in the post against Bobby Portis and his leering mean eyes. I love Bobby Portis. And then it just resulted in a wide open three because Kemba didn't get out to the perimeter quick enough. And it just little things like that you just have to be very, very sharp. And Kemba and Evan are, again, two of the smarter players in the NBA. I don't think the intellectual side of this is ultimately going to be a problem for them. It's just physically, what is the difference between Kemba Walker closing out and Elfrid Payton closing out? And what is the difference between Evan Fournier closing out and Reggie Bullock closing out? My bigger concern is actually something you didn't touch on all that much in the article, and that's more so Mitchell Robinson. And I think he is someone who, in my preseason prognosis for the Knicks, I was saying there will be these issues. Mitchell Robinson will be there to clean up a whole lot of them with his mobility and with his added size. And we've seen the added size. He's done a much better job against behemoths in the post, not getting bowled over. Still a fantastic shot blocker around the basket. But the mobility that defined his game, I think, is, if not entirely missing, then significantly diminished. We saw Evan Mobley just absolutely torch him the other night when he got caught on the wing, just a rip through right by him for a dunk. I can't remember Mitch blocking a three-pointer this year, which seemed to be something that occurred once or twice a game in the past. And it just...
Oh, he did. It was the first play of the Indiana game. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I remember it because it was a weird little elevator play they ran and he got the block. But I think that's the only one. Obi's blocked three.
Yeah. So there you go. The point being, like, he does not seem like quite the same guy. And I thought ultimately, like, you talk in your article a lot about the transition defense and the overfouling, like those are areas Mitch isn't going to solve. But to your point in the article, those are issues that are solvable. If Mitchell Robinson is not the same guy, I think that is an unsolvable problem for the Knicks. And the question is it just a matter of time, or is it the fact that, again, he put on all this weight?
I mean, yes and no. I do think he's getting back from an injury that is reasonable to expect him to take time to get back from. But I think he's been okay. I just think that it's a very high-stress role to put him in. I mean, again, this scheme is not a normal scheme. You know, it's super aggressive, and what it does is it sort of puts you in rotation immediately, and if all the perimeter players do their job, then essentially, eventually, someone's going to be driving towards Mitch or Noel. Now, it's a very helter-skelter scheme. It's kind of a bit of a thin line between frantic and aggressive. And that's a lot of stress to put on Mitch. He's going to make errors. Don't forget that he didn't have that much time in the scheme last year. And that's why I think you're seeing Noel comes back and he's like seamless. He's absolutely nailing it. And you can see his impact has been incredible. Hopefully he's okay after last night. I mean, I do think there's physical limitations for Mitch, but I think as the scheme beds in generally with that starting unit and he finds his feet, just I think he'll be all right. Maybe he won't be exactly the same guy, but, you know, him and Noel playing 48 minutes, I think is going to be, well, it is by design, the backbone of the scheme. And I think, I mean, maybe I'm just being overly optimistic, but I think it's going to get better. You know, it's been 11 games. It's been a funky 11 games. And where you see his errors are usually because he's hugging into the paint rather than closing out on shooters. And that's kind of just a matchup thing. You mentioned Mobley. You know, Mobley's just he's just a freak. You know, he's awesome already on both ends.
Yeah, so that's kind of my point. Mitch was supposed to be that guy, right? Like, not in terms of draft pedigree, but Mitch is like him blocking Harden step backs as a rookie. Like, he had those freakish qualities as well. Now I'm like, has he gone down just a drop on that like insane athleticism meter?
Or maybe.
That's sort of my question.
But if you watch like those, I mean, the Turner threes, that was sort of an inflection point for the narrative on Mitch this year. And I mean, I don't know, he makes a few errors, but you know, Turner's 7 feet tall and shoots like a OB-esque rookie year moon ball. Mitch is like almost blocking three or four of them. He's like fingertips away. So like, he hasn't been, you know, perfect Mitch, but I don't think he's been like awful. I think it's just like, as the whole starting unit has been, it's been patchy. I think the execution and the effort has been patchy, and that's what's been a bit disappointing.
Yeah. I think my underlying premise is like the Knicks almost, and maybe not, because obviously they didn't give Mitch the extension, so maybe that says a lot about what they thought about him. But in my mind, the Knicks were building this team around the idea that Mitchell Robinson could be a top 10 to 12 defensive player in the NBA. And he's been good defensively, but he hasn't quite been that. But anyways, Jack, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back and we'll continue this conversation on the Knicks defense. I love Thanksgiving, all the good food and treats and plenty of them. But maybe you want a yummy dessert that isn't so full of calories and sugar. Well, then it's the perfect time for Built Bars. Built Bar is the new holiday dessert. Feast on something delicious and feel good about it. One slice of pie has upwards of 300 calories, and that's on the low end. Most Built Bars are only 130 calories and only 4 grams of sugar with plenty of protein. Replace the coconut cream pie with coconut Built Bar, or go to raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any pie. Low calorie, low carb, low fat, high protein. Covered in 100% real chocolate. Built is a great option for when you're hungry. If Thanksgiving isn't coming soon enough, just go for a Built Bar or two now. Share some at your family gatherings. It makes things less awkward. Maybe Aunt Betty hasn't tried a Built Bar quite yet. New surprises all month. Limited time flavors arriving at Built.com regularly, so check the site often. There's nothing like a Built Bar Black Friday. Mark your calendar. Black Friday will be a huge event with all sorts of surprises. So go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, welcome back into Locked On Knicks. Once again, we wanted to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today. And every day we are available on all podcast platforms, including, and you know this if you are currently watching, on YouTube. And I am joined by my favorite Englishman, Jack Huntley. Shout out, Jack. Let's keep going. So we were talking Mitch a little bit. You mentioned Nerlens. Just in 3 games back now, Nerlens has made, again, not in terms of the team's overall ranking, but seemingly every time he's on the floor, a massive, massive difference. And I think a lot of it is like you can preempt a whole lot of defensive issues if you're forcing turnovers, right? Like that's just 5 or 6 extra possessions a game. I think Nerlens' first game back, Fred Katz had the stat. He had something like 12 deflections. Like in an average year, the NBA's league leader has 4, which is per game, which is just nuts. And you can, you're just removing however many chances that a team has to torch Kemba Walker or to beat Evan Fournier around the screen or to count on Julius Randle, as you note in your article, not moving as fast as he ideally should be moving. What have you seen from Nerlens since his return, and how do you think that could potentially shape the Knicks defense if he continues to, I mean, I guess pending Mitchell Robinson, play more and more?
I mean, I was not the biggest fan of Nerlens last year just because of, you know, his sort of the paradox of his two-way hands. Defensively, he's an absolute menace, like an absolute all-time deflections guy. But then on offensively, he has his struggles. I think we need him more this year. You know, this team's third in offense, and hasn't even played that well on offense yet, I would say. You know, offense is not an issue. So 48 minutes of Noel and Mitch is going to be the thing that sort of defines how good the defense can be. And then, you know, in turn, how good we can be as a team. I think Nerlens is really important for that, because he is an elite rim protector, and he's very disruptive and he suits the scheme and he's sort of well practiced in it. The only thing that's the problem with him defensively, I think, is certain matchups he just can't handle. You know, if it was him instead of Mitch against Valanciunas, he would have been absolutely torched, you know, and he struggled a little bit against Drummond just on the boards. He's just really small, you know, he's slender. But overall, I've been, delighted with how he's played. And I think he's more important this year than he was last year because his offensive limitations aren't felt so much because we really just are not struggling for playmakers as we were last year.
All right, let's talk Julius Randle a little bit, because I mentioned it before, but you noted his movement speed in your article at the time. He was literally, in terms of, I think, total miles traveled per game, he was last on the team. I checked it out. He is now second behind Kevin Knox. and I looked at that and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Come on, Kev.
That has been the defining. If you want a defining statistics of the Kevin Knox story, it's just like he doesn't really move that much. He kind of just is little tortoise-esque. But Randle, and you know this in your article too, a season ago, he was also the slowest guy on the Knicks. And last year he was getting all the plaudits in the world for his defensive work. There were advanced statistics that painted him as one of the single most impactful defenders in the NBA. I thought there was some noise there. I thought it was more about the surrounding pieces and that he was good a year ago. And this year it feels like there are moments where he's good, and he certainly has fantastic talent defensively. Like you put him in isolation against a high level scorer, like he will hold his own in a competitive moment. It's more so the moment to moment awareness, right? It's the not complaining about a foul on one end and getting back. It's not getting back cut when you're looking another direction. And I'm of the opinion that that'll continue to get better. And I think as things continue to flow because clearly like a lot of this is like frustration from the offensive end translating over to defense. And last night we saw him have a spectacular night offensively. I can't say I watched him every single possession on defense. And I know Georges Niang got him a couple times, which is not good, but he was by and large pretty solid. But what do you see from Randle? And to me, I think it's less so like, I mean, like obviously he has to cut out the bad plays, but you want more proactively good plays from him because you're sort of relying like the premise of this team defensively is, again, the guards are probably not going to be great, at least in the starting lineup. 3, 4, and 5 need to be really, really good.
I mean, yeah, you know, Julius is, you know, he's never going to be the, you know, the best defender on a team. His role on this team is to, you know, execute consistently and make the right reads and put in the effort. And he doesn't have as much of an excuse as the new guys, obviously, because he's used to the scheme. He should know, you know, where he has to be. And last year, I thought he was okay. You know, he was pretty good. He is not the most positionally instinctual defender. And I think that's where he gets found out, because he's often a beat behind the play and he has to react. And that's where you see him sort of overcommit, undercommit, a bit of hesitation. He's much better when, like you say, he's just in isolation and he can use his body, use his frame, use his quickness. He's got one job, that's to stop a guy, that's fine. But as a sort of symptom of the whole team, I think you're right. He is the most blatant example of how the offense affects the defense when it's going well and when it's not going well. You know, when we're humming on all cylinders offensively, I think we have a tendency to let the foot off the gas defensively and sort of get a bit complacent, let up a bit, and then, you know, leads are just disappearing like sand. Whereas last year, you just couldn't do that. And, you know, that habit, that reality helped forge the consistent execution that you needed for this defense. And Randle, I think, is the biggest culprit. He also has the biggest pass because he has the biggest load on offense, but there's like a nice middle ground there. You just can't be moaning about every call. You know, when you turn the ball over, you can't just be jogging back. He can take time off, but he has to do the little things. You know, the effort stuff is non-negotiable. I mean, I'm not super high on him as a team defender. I think he's good individually, but as a helper, he's never been amazing. But I think he can be a lot better than he has been so far this season. And to be fair to him, the last few games, I think he's got a bit better.
Yeah. All right, let's end this defensive conversation on a positive. I'm really optimistic about the bench on defense. They were very solid a year ago, basically return all the same people. And I think Emmanuel Quickly and Obi Toppin, and this will move nicely into our Obi Toppin conversation, but I think both of them have made pretty significant strides on that end of the floor. And not that Quickly was like terrible, especially by rookie standards a year ago, but he just seems more consistent in everything he does, and the reads he's making and leveraging his wingspan. And you see moments. I know in your article you highlighted one where like he just got too sort of ahead of himself and got caught up in the backcourt, was over aggressive and just got blown by. I think as the season is going along, we're seeing less and less of that. Maybe another guy whose offense is fueling his defense, but we're seeing moments of real harassment. Like last night against the Sixers, or maybe it was against the Cavs, but he had this great like jump up and like deflect a pass. And it was almost like a defensive lineman batting a ball down. That's American football, Jack. it was, just some great proactive moments from him. Rose as well has been, I mean, a little inconsistent, like Ricky Rubio was torching him, but that was, I'm going to write that off as an aberration a little bit. And then to your beloved Obi, I'll leave the floor to you, but he's been, again, not who we thought he was going to be coming out of the draft on defense.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just touch on sort of Quickly and Rose and the bench unit. I think they have been better defensively than the Stars, but I would caution that they have been sort of aided. It's been inflated how much better they've been than the Starters, because all of the bad shooting luck has happened to the Starters. There is a huge discrepancy. And I think this is why all the on-off numbers for the Starters and the bench are pretty much like a mirror image of each other. The bench is much better. It's all on defense. And whilst I do think that's better execution, familiarity with the scheme, there is a massive discrepancy in opponent three-point shooting between the bench and the Starters. And I think that will even out as the season goes on, and then it'll be a bit more representative as to what the actual gap is defensively between the two. I do think IQ's been good. I think he's got a lot better. But yeah, I don't think it's as, I mean, I think on Clean the Glass, it's like 99th percentile difference between Derek Rose and Kemba Walker. There is a difference, but it's not that big, in my opinion. But yeah, Obi has, I mean, you know, he's been a breath of fresh air just generally. And, you know, it's a good segue, because if we're talking about the team's offense influencing its defensive effort, that just does not happen with Obi. He plays every single possession exactly the same disposition. He's 100 miles an hour, active all the way through, no matter what. And yeah, it makes it really easy to root for him and extremely enjoyable, because he's playing so well at the moment.
All right, well, let's get into it. We're going to take our second and final break. We will come back. We'll talk more Obi Toppin. We're back, and better than ever, a new web interface for the start of basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, guys, we are back on Locked On. I've said Locked In Knicks like three times last week. I gotta get that checked out. But anyways, I'm Gavin Shaw. He's Jack Huntley @ByJackHuntley on Twitter. Certainly throw him a follow. Again, a fantastic piece on the Knicks defense that dropped on October 3rd. It is pinned on his Twitter, so go there and check it out. And soon to be coming out, a fantastic piece on Obi Toppin that I just got. I got a preview of. I got that covert drop email, get file, had to put in 7 different passports, had my hand scanned, had my eyes scanned. It was at a secure facility at Rikers Island. There was a 15-step process, but I finally got to read it, and it was amazing. But Jack, I'll start here. I think your enthusiasm for, and maybe I only know you on the internet and on podcasts, so maybe I'm mischaracterizing you, but you strike me as a fairly optimistic person. And I think you're certainly in regards to basketball, and your enthusiasm for maybe life is maybe too grand, but certainly for the sport translates in everything you write. I think it really translates in this piece in particular, because Obi is such an inherently joyful player who sort of brings like the very like base enjoyments of basketball, like Obi Toppin encapsulates all of them. And I think that really comes through in your writing. So I will start off here. What delights you the most about Obi Toppin?
I mean, I think it's, I mean, thank you, first of all, I think it's just the way he is so sort of boyish. He's very authentic in the how much he loves playing. And I mean, he's just an insane athlete. The combination of his sort of his disposition, his effort levels, his activity levels, coupled with like the way he moves, how fast he is, everything he does is sort of like sharp. And it's just extremely enjoyable to watch, especially now he's getting a bit more joy, you know, with his teammates finding him. Maybe they're becoming familiar with those cuts. There's a bit more space, obviously. He's just an absolute menace. He's electric in transition. He's always moving. And yeah, he's played really well. He's been about as good as he could possibly be without hitting shots. So yeah, it's been a joy to watch, definitely.
Yeah. All right. So you talked a little bit about his defense, but where do you think the biggest improvements are for him offensively this year? Because for me, I'm almost conflicted on if he definitively got better or if it's more so that he's finally being used in the right way and being allowed to be a rim runner, particularly with Emmanuel Quickley. Obviously, last year he was already on basically the same bench unit, but getting some minutes with hybrid lineups with starters where he constantly has good shooting around him, constantly has like never, not that he played a ton with Elf last year, but never has to play with Elfrid Payton, right? It's always Derrick Rose, Emmanuel Quickley. It seems like his environment has certainly gotten better, but I'd also argue like this is a guy who, again, in the jump shot hasn't shown the way it has or did in summer league, but just definitively has rounded out different portions of his game. Like the ball handling is a little bit better. He seems so much more decisive attacking closeouts. Last year, literally his only move was that fake dribble handoff, and he would do it even when there wasn't another player coming around for a handoff. And it kept working because it was so like his just jolting movements were so shocking that it kind of caught defenders off guard regardless. But this year, it just seems like he's that much quicker in everything he does. And he's figuring out for a guy with a somewhat limited skill set offensively how to fully leverage that athletic ability.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing is he's an incredible finisher. So that, you know, was the whole book on him coming out of the draft. That was the bankable skill. That was, you know, he was a Amari-esque type finisher. And, you know, so far this season, he's been incredible. It's not just dunks, you know, he's making these sort of drive into a defender, hang a little bit, and then just put up a little baby jumper. He's contorting himself for these obscene layups around people. And yeah, it's the pressure that he puts on the rim. You know, even when he doesn't get the ball, his cuts are, you know, getting defensive attention. And it's constant. It's every possession all the time. And if your IQ or Rose, who he's had incredible chemistry with since day one, you know, it's just an easy play to make, and it opens up the floor for everyone else. Defensively, his improvements have, I mean, I think he's actually a really good team defender. We were talking about Randall earlier. I think he's a more instinctual team defender than Randall, and he's aided by the fact that his effort does not change. He's always super active. But I think in one-on-one situations where people do target him, you know, he's hit and miss, but for the most part, he holds his own. And especially against sort of quicker guys, I think he's been good. The problem comes when he goes against bigger guys, which have sort of lower center of gravities and more mass. He can be moved, and he could do with putting on a little bit of weight or a bit of strength in his lower body. But yeah, I mean, all in good time. I mean, you remember doing all those draft podcasts when we were talking about him. The whole thing was, is he going to be able to even be playable defensively? You know, he's just going to get picked apart every single possession, and he's far exceeded that already. So happy days.
Yeah, I mean, that was my concern last year was, like, especially when he first started, was the offense has to be so good to offset his defense. And as the defense has gotten better, the bar on offense was like, we were talking about, like, this is someone, and this was sort of the expectation for him. Like, he needs to walk into the NBA as a borderline 20-point scorer. And when he was so far away from that, I was like, oh God, this is a real mistake. But then you started watching the defense. And for me, like, I came in with that opinion because you heard from so many, like, again, a lot of really smart people, like, it's just not going to happen for him on that end. And you watch and you're like, it's not that bad. And then it's to your point, it's gotten to the point where he's actively a positive now, especially his rim protection. And I think you note this in the article, is in the 76th percentile for his position ahead of guys like Giannis, like right nearly on par with Mitchell Robinson. Like that is like the flash plays defensively and the flash plays offensively. I mean, like his speed, and you notice, like I said it yesterday, I think he's like one of the five fastest guys in the NBA, maybe end to end. And it almost feels like, I mean, this is sacrilegious to invoke these names, but a little bit of what the Miami Heat had going with Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. And then early in LeBron's Cleveland tenure with Kevin Love, where a guard will get a rebound. And if Obi is on the floor, you're almost just throwing it, right? You're not even really looking. You're saying he will be streaking down the court. He will be ahead of whoever's there. And even when it goes wrong, like last night, Burks threw him one. That was just a terrible pass. Obi sprinted out of bounds, somehow threw it over his head, got it back to Burks, who got a 2 IQ for a 3. He just makes really positive things happen with that level of activity and energy.
Yeah, 100%. His energy is insane. In transition, yeah, he's because he closes out on shots so well, which, you know, we were talking earlier, that's like a hallmark of the scheme. You absolutely have to close out on these 3-point shooters. When that shot goes up, he's gone. You know, he's over half court in, you know, one. As soon as whoever got the rebound, Obi's gone and his hands up. And yeah, it's beautiful to watch.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. All right. This is a bummer of a question to possibly end on, but we have to ask it every time. And you get into a little bit in the article, but his future on this team, it's sort of what we're really like beating around the bush this whole conversation. He's still only playing 14 minutes a game this year, and as you clarify in your article, got 28 minutes against the Celtics. There was another game where he got 23 minutes. Outside of that, he's averaging 11 and a half minutes a night, and it doesn't really matter how well he plays. We were saying this before, like there could be a night where he would score 30 points if given enough minutes, but you just never know it because there's a cap ceiling on how much he can play any given game as long as Julius Randle is healthy. And maybe at some point, like Julius suffers like a minor nagging injury, goes down for 10 games, and the Knicks really get to see what they have in Obi Toppin. But right now, it feels like there's this weird clock on it where it's like, this is great, but this guy is probably destined for more. And that's awesome because initially some of us, raise his hand, thought he was going to be a bust. And this is obviously the better outcome, but there's a downside of that where it's like, will we get to see the greatest version of this on the Knicks?
Well, I mean, probably not. You know, your best player plays the same position. So, no, you know, they cannot coexist as actualized versions of themselves on the same team, really. I mean, small ball is a great idea, and there is definitely a role for that. I think it can work. I think it can be a get us out of a big hole when we're down, say, 10, 15, 20 points. That can be something that you turn to. But it's not a problem with an easy solution. I completely agree with Tibbs in his insistence on 48 minutes of rim protection. Like we were saying earlier, especially this season, we've got 3 centers on the roster who are really good defenders. You know, whilst they are there and whilst we are playing this scheme, which was worked, it worked last year with the 3rd best defense in the league, you have to have that rim protection. Offense is not a problem at the moment. So, you know, doing something just to get Obi more minutes at the expense of the general context of the team, which at the moment is offense great, defense not so great. I get it. You know, I get it. And with Randle, maybe he could shave a few minutes off Randle and take some of those and get up to sort of 15 a game consistently. I would like to see that happen. But is Tibbs going to do that? No. And his rationale for doing it is that Randall's his best player and he's going to play him loads of minutes. So that makes sense. You know, it's kind of just we've got to enjoy what we get. Hope that over the course of the season, when everyone beds in and Tibbs is probably a little bit more comfortable experimenting, with lineups and tweaking roles, maybe we see a little bit more. As you say, when people miss time, maybe that opens up minutes. But I just, you know, it is a problem. And eventually there's, you know, Obi's probably going to be on the way out, let's be honest. But that's down the line. And, you know, him becoming a really good player makes him like a sizable chip in any future trade. And in the meantime, he's playing minutes and he's contributing to winning. So, Tibbs is Tibbs. So, it is what it is to a certain extent. I would like to see him play more, but I can understand why he doesn't. And, you know, we're just got to enjoy what he does when he does get on the floor at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And I guess my final one would be, I'm curious if there's a role in the playoffs for that small ball lineup, because we saw the Clippers, I mean, really, like, not, I don't want to say like change the trajectory of like playoff basketball going forward, because either them and they got out in the conference finals. But it was, it's interesting what they've done the last couple of years, and particularly this past year, like we're against the Mavericks, when the Mavericks went super big, they went super small. And then they theoretically, they beat the Jazz, obviously. And then they tried to do the same thing to the Suns, and the Suns said, oh no, this is why we spent a number one pick on DeAndre Ayton, who we're not extending, but we value in the moment. And DeAndre Ayton was able to sort of counteract that small ball lineup. And it was enough, at least sans Kawhi Leonard, for the Suns to win that series. And my big takeaway from all that was, wow, it's a good thing the Knicks have Mitchell Robinson, like this hyper switchable, like mega athlete freak center. And again, with Mitch, like this goes back to the earlier portion of the conversation. Who knows if he is still that guy? But I wonder, again, like the Knicks would not see the Clippers outside of the NBA Finals. And that feels like a pipe dream for both those teams at this point. But I wonder if there is a playoff matchup where Obi and Randall makes a lot of sense with another team going small, or if Tibbs sees another team go small and he says, all right, they're going to be getting to the rim a lot. I still want Mitchell Robinson, even if he has to hover over to a three-point shooter, I want him on the floor to try and recover. I want Nerlens Noel on the floor to try and recover to help at the rim. And we saw with Rudy Gobert that even with a great defender, that is easier said than done. And I wonder if having someone like Obi, who can give you some of that mobility defensively and then offensively, can act as a rim runner to counteract a small ball look on the other end of the floor, if there's some value there. But this is me galaxy branding it, because that is far down the road and it would take a very specific team for that to sort of come to fruition.
No, I mean, I definitely agree. That playoffs are all about, you know, the ability to be versatile in whatever your base schemes are, because by the end of a series, you are not going to be playing the same coverages that you play at the start. So you have to have plans B, C, and D to go to. Small ball is definitely an option. I mean, in order for that to become a viable, or at least something that Thibodeau would consider, obviously, like you say, obviously with the matchups and everything, but Obi's going to have to be hitting shots. Like, if he is not hitting shots, then I don't think Tibbs is going to turn to that. So that's one thing. But I wouldn't necessarily rule out the possibility of Tibbs, you know, looking further down the line and being open to it just based on the first 11 games of the season. You know, we spent 20 minutes talking about how at the moment, learning the defensive scheme and executing that properly is the priority for the Knicks. If he starts messing around with roles, you know, taking away rim protection and centers, it changes the scheme. And so I think after sort of game 40, 50, we might see a little bit more of that Obi Randall look, as long as the defense has shown itself to be effective, sort of like it was last season. If you've nailed down the scheme, then we can look at something else. But until we execute that properly, it's just not something that Tibbs is going to prioritize getting reps at. Again, it's a good problem to have, but let's just wait and see how we're looking after sort of 50 games. And then, yeah, like you say, in the playoffs, it's a completely different ball game. And, you know, what happens and what works and what doesn't work in the regular season, like we saw with the Hawks, it doesn't apply over the little bubble cauldron that is an individual playoff series. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I think we were both of sort of the same mind. Whether it's the playoffs, whether it's the regular season, I think Obi Toppin, it might be a 30-point game, it might be a giant fourth quarter. I think he's going to have some moments for this Knicks team. But Jack Huntley, that is a good of a note as any to end on. Really appreciate you joining me. One final time to remind everyone, even though it's right in this graphic, where they can find you on social media and all the great stuff you've done on the Strickland. I mean, maybe even going further back, because I think, again, all your articles absolutely worth reading.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. It's always good to hop on. So it's at by Jack Huntley on Twitter. I write for The Strickland. I mean, just to plug everything The Strickland's doing at the moment, we've got a Patreon this year. So check that out. There's some great content on there. We've had some awesome guests on some of the podcasts on there with Schwinn, and I know Draft Strickland and Prez had a special guest on yesterday that you probably want to check out.
Yeah.
It's very top-in related.
Yeah, right.
So just plug in everything that they're doing over there. And check out my stuff. Thank you very much for listening. All good. The sky isn't falling. We'll be all right. We'll be all right.
You love to hear it. All right. Thanks so much, Jack. And that is it for this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Again, if you're not already, please subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and leave us a 5-star review. If not for me, then for Jack. He really gets down when we don't get 5-star reviews. All right, and we'll talk to you all soon. Appreciate it.